I was meeting with a young deacon who was just newly ordained this week, and he said he was preaching. And I said, that's a coincidence, because whenever my assistant that I had for a few years would preach, he'd say, I'm preaching on Trinity Sunday again. And then this young deacon was preaching on Trinity Sunday. And then all the young assistants who talked to each other would all say, yeah, the rector made us preach on Trinity Sunday every year. We don't even know that we're doing it, but we just do it. So anyway, I don't have anybody to boss around. So I'm preaching on Trinity Sunday, but I'm actually not going to specifically preach on the Trinity. I'm going to talk to you about the Trinity, the truth of the Trinity. Let's just say the truth of the Trinity goes without saying. And I'm going to talk to you about the reading that we just heard from the book of Proverbs, the first reading that we heard. Many years ago, my wife took a trip to Greece. We were on the island of Patmos. You may recognize the island of Patmos because it's where the book of Revelation was written by St. John the Evangelist. And we had a lovely little place on the, what they call the Scala, which is the seaport. And there's a little, very nice little village there. Really enjoyed it. Interesting place. Beautiful in a very stark kind of rocky kind of way. But anyway, we enjoyed it. We're right by the sea and kind of right in the village, which is a very nice thing to be, not just the tourist area, but in the village. So every night I would hear this young Greek woman call out with a beautiful voice. I don't know, maybe around summertime, something like that. It's every evening, it was the same thing. She would call out, Yanni, Yanni, Yanni. There'd be more distance between it than that. And I thought, isn't this a beautiful, I don't know what this Greek tradition is. Isn't this a beautiful Greek tradition? And in the evening, the Greek women sing this lovely song, Yanni, Yanni, Yanni. After about 3 days, I realized something. There is no, every second, yet being the Isle of Patmos and the story of the John Evangelist, every second boy in that town is probably named John. There is also no J in the Greek alphabet. So what she was calling out was Johnny, 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 it's time for supper. That's what she was doing every evening. And I'm going, and like myself as a young child, when my mother called me for supper, I would, of course, pretend that I didn't hear. I go home and you're going, I was calling for you for half an hour. And she goes, I'm going, oh, but mother, I heard nothing. So this is what this, I had kind of romanticized whatever this was. But it was basically a young Greek woman in great frustration calling her son home for dinner. Anyway, I had 3 days of blissful appreciation of the local culture before I realized what was going on. The reason I think of this is because in the Book of Wisdom, we have wisdom calling out. It mentions it in the 8th and the 9th chapters. We heard it today. Wisdom is calling out, and she is specifically, she's calling home for people home for dinner. She, if you look into chapter 9, you'll see, she says, I've got the wine prepared. I've got the beast slaughtered, whatever it is. And it's obviously a very delicious dinner. And she is standing in the gates of the town, trying to get somebody's attention and calling out, Yanni, 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 it's time for dinner. But specifically, she is calling out, she mentions the symbol that she's calling to her. So in the Old Testament, you may be aware of this already, excuse me for repeating it. In the Old Testament, there are three kinds of fools. Yeah, you thought there were more than three kinds of fools, didn't you? But there are three kinds of fools in the Old Testament. There are the simple, and that is simply people who are inexperienced. My professor called them greenhorns, so to speak. You know, they just don't know because they're lacking in life experience. There are, well, in the little, I don't know if this is true in rural Alberta, but where I come from, there are people we call ignorant, which just doesn't mean they're lacking in knowledge. It means they really enjoy lacking in knowledge and are rejoicing in their lack of knowledge. So they're kind of going out and having what they consider to be a good time until they run into the inevitable wall. And, but in the meantime, are just kind of enjoying their foolishness, so to speak. And the third kind of fool is the what we would call the hardened fool. And that is the kind of fool whose foolishness, you can see this. Anybody watch The Godfather? I watched Godfather 2 and 1 and 2 this week. Forget about 3, don't even bother. But anyway, I watched it. And you can see the transition in this character, the main character, in which he goes from just being inexperienced, something changed. You can see it in him to where he becomes bitter and vengeful. So that's the transition to being sort of an ignorant fool into being a hardened fool, where you're not open to guidance, so to speak. So wisdom calls out, and she calls out to us in this beautiful meal. And she is calling out specifically to, there are the teachable fools and the unteachable fools. She's calling out specifically to the teachable fools. And she's inviting them to a great dinner. And of course, wisdom's dinner is more than simply food. Wisdom's food is wisdom itself. And wisdom itself is more than intellectual wisdom. I know you've probably all heard this before. It's more than intellectual wisdom. It's possible to say, for example, that you can be wise as a carpenter, or you can be wise as a plumber. You could be wise as a cowboy, I guess. I don't know, infinitely. It simply means that you are able to live life in a skillful manner. Not simply intellectually, but skillfully. And involves even more things than that. Wisdom involves things like, it's the word we use for sexual knowledge. You know, the begats? So-and-so begat, knew so-and-so, and they knew so-and-so, and they knew so-and-so. And they're not just talking about philosophy when they get together. It's talking about a deep and intimate knowledge of another person or of a subject. Wisdom is calling us into a deep experiential knowledge of something, and that is the meaning of life itself. So oftentimes, if we are, I will speak for myself, if I am in a particularly Dostoevsky-like mood, you know, searching for the meaning of life. What does it all mean? What does it all mean? How do I figure this out? It is good to be reminded that we do not need to determine whether or not life is good and worthy of investing ourselves in. The reason we are freed from that is because in the book of Genesis, chapter 1, what does God say at the beginning of the creation when he stands back and looks at it all? And he goes, it is confusing. No, not too sure about it. What does he say? It is good. It is very good. And so we are freed as we enter into wisdom's invitation, an experiential invitation that enriches us. One of the things we're freed from is the constant questioning about whether life is good and our lives are worth living, because God has already said it is good. So we're going, oh, good. I can quit reading all those Russian novels now, because it turns out it's good. It is good. We're free. I like the expression that we're freed from making that decision. It's already true. It's already been announced. So wisdom invites us. The word wisdom also implies other things. You know, our language is so, it's hard to translate one language into another. But wisdom also implies other things other than goodness and meaning. Wisdom implies, I really like this, order, dignity, beauty, and joy. Those are all implied in the word wisdom. So it's not simply, you know, it's not simply the ability to do complex mathematical equations. I mentioned that because I have no ability whatsoever to do that. I bless those who do. It's not simply the ability to have a deep philosophical understanding of life. It is to enter experientially into a life which has been declared meaningful, which is full of beauty, dignity, order, and joy. That's a nice invitation to dinner she's offering. So I think, I don't know if you ever feel like this. Maybe you don't. Sometimes during the course of the day, I might say to myself, I should pray now. I'm obliged to pray as a priest. I just play the offices of the church. And I'm going, I should pray now. Yeah, but what's the point? You know, this is not a good day. You know, it's a bad day. Tired, annoyed, whatever, you know. I don't want to pray. But because the archbishop might be watching somehow, maybe as spies or something, or simply because it's a discipline I've undertaken, I open up the book of wisdom and I allow it to enter into me. In the words spoken and the prayer that it invokes. And I always say to myself at the end, what was I thinking of? This is the truth. This is the truth. And I'll often say at the end of it, when I'm praying, I'll go, those are the two best times of my day, morning prayer and evening prayer. Those are the most nourishing parts of the day. I don't know what I was thinking, you know, that I would possibly want to avoid that. So wisdom invites us to her banquet. She stands at the gates of the city and says, come to me, simple ones. Not meant as an insult. Simple ones, it means us who need to learn. Come to me, simple ones. Eat this banquet I have prepared. A banquet of rich food, a banquet of beauty and order and dignity and joy, a banquet which will have you enter not just with your minds, but with your entire being, and transform you in ways you could not even have thought of 15 minutes ago. So this food is beautiful. This food took human flesh. This wisdom took human flesh in the person of Jesus. So let us accept her invitation. Accept her invitation to to become wise and to eat this banquet she has prepared for us. Amen.